Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome to Hoovering, the podcast about eating. I'm Jessica Fostercue. I love eating as much as anything else in the world, but also it sometimes brings me conflict, shame, and all sorts of other things that are rubbish. It's complicated and I think fascinating. This is a conversation with an interesting soul, not just about food, but about gobbling it up, or if you will, hoovering. Hey winners! This week's guest is an absolute catch, as far as I'm concerned, because she's the creator and mastermind behind a cooking book that I use at least once a week. It's like a Bible to me. It's called The Green Roasting Tin. And she is none other than Rukmini Iyer, the creator of that book and another series of tray bake recipe books, as well as other recipe books, but it's the tray bake ones that have sort of lodged themselves into my heart, I imagine, for the rest of my life. They are so good. She's on Instagram as Miss Minifer, if you know her better as that. And she's actually got a new book coming out, not that I knew that before we arranged a Hoover together, another vegetarian one. Or barbecue stuff, fittingly called The Green Barbecue. First of all, though, I just want to say thanks for listening to Hoovering. Tell everyone else about it, okay? One way to do that is to subscribe to the podcast. You can give it a 5-star review if you like as well. Why not? It's a nice thing to do. Tell your friend about it. Tell a friend and a relative about it on one of your weekly Zooms. I'd be deeply grateful for that. If you love the podcast so much you'd like to help me out financially with running the podcast, you can do that. You can give a one-off payment at Acast Supporter, or you can give anything from as little as £2 a month and become a patron. Go to patreon.com/thehooveringpod and you'll see all the cool stuff I swap. Podcast-related things like guest recipes, exclusive content, a discount or free tickets to live shows. All sorts, really, in exchange for your hard-earned cash. Or if you're like, I just want to give you a fiver once, that's where you'd go to Acast Supporter to do that. If you're based in or around London and you want to try Oddbox, where I get my wonky fruit and veg, you can get tenner off your first box if you want. There's a link in the podcast notes or in the at the Hoovering Pod on Twitter and the bio there. There's a link, which makes a box only a few quid. So you'd be very welcome to use that link. I think Oddbox are incredible. They salvage lots of food that would have otherwise gone to waste, but you wouldn't know it. That everything you get in the box is just as snazzy as you'd get in any normal fruit and veg box. It's just sometimes a bit scuffed or massive or whatever. Right, so let's get into this episode of Rukmini. She is so charming and brilliant and brainy, and she's a chef, but she's been a food stylist. There were so many things I wanted to pick her beautiful, brilliant mind about. As you'll hear, I was pretty giddy. We had lunch together over the Zooms, as is the modern way. I made a herb frittata from one of her books, and she made a recipe I will let her reveal from a future book. which sounded amazing. I felt like I could almost smell it as it was cooking in her home. The only thing to warn you about is that there is some background noise from our pets, and at one point an oven beeps. But I mean, what can you do? That's lockdown life, babe. If you get upset about that, then there's so much more in the world to be worried about. I reckon just sort of do some work on really letting it go. yeah, so at some point, our pets are noisy. But yeah, that's all there is to warn you about. Other than that, just have a lovely time, please. I certainly did, as you'll hear.
I have made your Persian herb frittata from, I think, your most recent book, is it? The Around the World one?
Yes, that's right, yes.
Yeah. I think I might be, like, I already know I'm quite a slow reader, like at novels and stuff. I think I might also be like a slow chopper. I don't know if this is a thing, but like I've learned over the years, like, get all your stuff ready and get everything chopped before you do the actual mixing of stuff together and that. But I'll I chop the dill, and then I was like, I just quickly put that bin out. Like, I really struggle to focus on the task in hand, especially during lockdown. So yeah, long story short, mine's still in the oven, and then it will have 10 minutes resting time.
Perfect. Well, that's perfect. Yes, that will be about the time that my bread and butter pudding comes out of the oven. So
I'm always so impressed by anybody who makes bread and butter pudding, let alone on the regular. It's such a great way of using up slightly gone hard bread, isn't it?
Absolutely. And chocolate, which is always good to use.
Oh, it's always got chocolate in.
Oh, so it's a chocolate bread and butter pudding. Yes. Oh, so I'm testing it for my next book, which is a baking book. So it's got a whole bread and butter chapter. So we've kind of had baked goods coming out of our ears. And I feel like I may not have any teeth. This might be the last time anyone sees my teeth, because they're probably about to rot.
just having to taste, yeah, sugar cakes every 5 minutes.
Yeah, the first few days it was fun. And then, you know, I know everyone says, oh, sugar's probably bad for you. No, I think that's rubbish. I ate sugar as a kid. I was fine. And then you realise, no, actually, I think my mood is actually really quite badly affected by these peaks and troughs in eating. Even if you only have a small bit of cake, but if you're making five a day, you've got to test them, or, you know, taste them.
Totally. Oh no, definitely. I feel very affected by sugar, actually. I feel like it's one of the few things where, well, I suppose it's so terrible, but like every now and again, I'm like, oh, I'm really feeling the effect of caffeine, or, oh, I feel really drunk after one glass of wine. Whereas sugar, I always think, oh God, I've had some sugar. Oh, I've had some sugar. Like, I feel very
jumpy.
Yeah, a bit jumpy and a bit hyper. I did an episode of this with a brilliant comedian called Sukh Ojala, and we made a type of like a sort of fried donutty bread covered in sugar, and it was so delicious. But, you know, it was hard for me to listen back. I had to cut lots of it out because I sounded hammered. I just sounded wasted because I was so... And I'd made like a puree, like a strawberry sauce to drizzle on it. It was just icing sugar and fresh strawberries, basically. But it
Lovely.
Was like, I
Sweet.
Was. It was so delicious, but I was absolutely, yeah. It didn't make me the best host. Oh, well, my cat has come for a sniff around.
My dog is just in the background. She has this love-hate relationship with cats where I think she would quite like to be friends with them. But if they run, she'll run after them. And they don't like that.
Yeah. I'll tell you an interesting thing about if you're having to have lots of sugar for testing at the moment that a dentist friend taught me, or I watched her doing with her children, was like, what's that about? It's apparently if you have some cheese after sugar, that's great for your teeth.
Oh, wow. That sounds like a great tip. Thank you so much.
I mean, it could be absolute bollocks, but it was a dentist friend who said it. It's just something to do with the alkaline
Maybe it neutralises it.
Some sort of neutralising action. And any excuse to have some cheese, right?
Absolutely. I'm sorry if you can hear some clucking in the background. I don't know why she's crying. Pepe, can you stop crying, please? Do you want to come and say hi?
Yes, please.
Come around. Oh, hello. Well, that was her come and gone. Sorry, hopefully she'll settle down.
That's okay. Hey, look, it's a podcast. It's it's not live radio. One, it's
everyone on podcast. Live radio, listen to my dog.
Yeah, come and listen to my dog having a snuffle. No, I mean, I think this is the sounds of clanking and cooking and houses and pets are all most welcome on this podcast. So I've got so many things I want to ask you. You've written, is it four books now?
Four Roasting Tin books are out now, and I ghost wrote some books before that. So,
oh, amazing. Well, yeah, I want to ask about that actually, because I mean, I suppose actually you're probably bored of answering it, but I'd love to. Did you start as a food stylist and then move into the? I mean, what's the definition of a food stylist versus a chef? Because it seems to sort of be a chef, but who also has to make it look beautiful.
I think that's a good definition. I don't think chefs think that food stylists are necessarily real chefs. I mean, as right. in, it helps as a stylist if you've had some chef training.
Yes, okay.
So you understand the cooking part, but then the yeah. styling part is the visual part. So you have to stop thinking like a chef and start thinking like a photographer and right. how things are going to look on the plate.
So isn't that interesting? I would think historically, because the books, the tray bake books, I mean, they're all stuff that you can pop in one tray and pop in the oven.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
mean, it's incredible. I've used them so much. I'm mainly veggie, and the green tin one is, you know, it's probably one of the most well-thumbed books in my house. And it looks like, I think any you. Brilliant cookbook should, as in it's like all covered in scuds of old food and dirty handprints. Do you know yeah. what I mean? Like,
no,
like,
mine are as well.
It's joyful. I find that joyful to look at.
Slightly crinkly like, pages because it's yeah, tomato juice and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a, is it the, I don't know how to pronounce it right, but Gado Gado or Gado Gado recipe. Oh.
Gado Gado, but I don't actually.
Gado know. Gado, that's right. Just literally the yeah, only just... version of it I didn't try there. Yeah. Gado Gado.
<It's>, that, but I might be pronouncing it wrong.
No, I bet you're not. Yeah, I'm Mrs. Malaprop, but I make that probably every couple of weeks.
And it's that so is nice. Like, there's isn't so it? Much that the peanut butter sauce. Handprint.
Oh my word!
It's like crack. Oh,
thanks, darling. Wow, mine has arrived.
And it's garnished.
Ta-da!
Mon Dieu!
Oh yes.
Is your partner
please.
A chef?
No, she's not. I made it, and then she I think she's got a spidey sense. For when I'm like just about to teeter into stress and just went, do you want to start your podcast? And I'll finish that off like an absolute hero.
That's so nice. That's exactly what you want.
Oh my God, it smells amazing.
Oh, fantastic.
Wow.
It looks great.
In. Oh yes, I'm really excited about it.
I should hear my beeper go off for the pudding. I think it maybe be another 10 minutes.
Oh, perfect. Well, I'm going to let it do its sitting thing. But yes. That's what I was going to say, I think. Because in my mind, things that you'd cook in the oven in one tray aren't the most photogenic thing. So it does seem... Yes. Do you know what I mean? I feel like surely things like a cottage pie or the things you traditionally think of that you just get to stick in the oven for an hour and get on with your life for a bit, you know, joyfully, are they not the most photogenic generally?
Yes, so this is
an absolute blinder there.
Well, I suppose if some things like gratin,
they
are yes, just comedy French accents. They look lovely and bubbly and crunchy on top, but that is a lot of brown. And yeah. there are a fair number of those in the books, but I think they're mixed up with. I always think, you know, if something looks nice, it's probably going to taste nice. And if you have a tray of roasted vegetables. You're both thinking, well, what's going to improve my eating experience? And that's probably also going to improve how it looks. So handful of herbs, handful of nuts, maybe a burrata in the middle or like a yogurt dressing. You know, you just think of...
And as a burrata in the middle of something has never not improved it.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I tried that in a pizza restaurant near my house and it was like,
yes.
Oh, God. That is like, yes. yeah, mozzarella times a million, isn't it? Yeah.
Isn't it? And they give you one just for you. And you're like, yes, yeah. you're all mine.
That's
all mine.
It should always be.
Yes.
If you've never tried it and you're listening, it's like this sort of giant buffalo mozzarella ball that you pierce and it's like liquid inside.
Yes. Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah.
And the nice thing about lockdown, I think, and the fact that you can't go out to restaurants is if you think, oh, well, I would have gone out to a restaurant, you can usually find it like a local deli or someone who is delivering their restaurant quality burrata. And you think, well, basically.
I deserve this.
Yeah, I'm not paying restaurant wine prices, so I shall spend it on cheese instead.
Ah, totally. I'd love to know how your... Just sort of a synopsis of your career history, if that's not too massive and vague a version of the question. Like, how do you go into food styling and then how did you go into your books, Why Tray Bakes, and yeah, how exciting that there's a baking one coming.
I do like baking.
But yeah, where did it all begin for you in terms of making food look beautiful? Why that side of it, and maybe not chefing initially, and then, or did you do chefing? Anyway, I'd love to know it, please.
Okay, I'll try not to make it too wordy. And that way you can ask more questions rather than if I just go off on a monologue and you're like, yes, well, I've heard your entire life history and it's 6 hours later. And so I used to be a lawyer and I really found it incredibly dull and boring. And it was back when people had just started food blogging and I didn't really know what that was. But I started a Tumblr,
right.
And I just sort of started looking at these pretty pictures of food and thinking, oh, I quite like, you know, I was just using my phone and just uploading things that I made. And I, at the same time, concurrently, I sort of read about this job called food styling. And I thought, oh, that's kind of what I'm doing, which is arranging things. And God, if I look now at some of the pictures I took, but I mean, it was 6 or 7 years ago, absolutely horrendous, but you've got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And then
you don't want to talk about my comedy from 6 or 7 years ago.
it's a graph and you should hope it's always going to go up and not like the curve back down again.
Yeah.
But I just realised that doing that and thinking of fun things to make and going to the supermarket on the way home and planning my dinner. And I had a massive cookbook collection. I had always loved cooking anyway, but there was a new part to it, which was photographing food I made, which was not a thing. You know how it became a thing? You know, people didn't really photograph their dinner maybe 10 years ago, but now, back then they did. And I had thought a few times, maybe I would like to be a cook instead, but I don't know how. And I realised that working as a chef would be really, really useful as training, but it wasn't a lifestyle that I really wanted.
Yeah,
I could kind of tell that before I'd worked in a kitchen. And I did work in a kitchen over the summer after I went to cookery school. It just sort of confirmed what I thought, which is it was great training, but it is so, it's really blokey. Like everyone's lovely who works in the kitchens, but they're all about, I don't know, 16. I was 25 and I felt like everyone's grandma and they all had so much energy and you have to just have this, I suppose it is like doing service must be kind of analogous to doing a comedy gig. You have all this adrenaline and you're on. And then it's over and then you can't sleep, but then you've got to get up and get to the kitchen for 6:30 next morning and do it all again. The prep time is, I mean, obviously they don't make you take the bins out halfway, but the prep time is more chilled. But every time you gear up towards service, you've got that.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just so high octane. And I thought I can't do this all the time. I love the buzz you get from service, but then if you've got to just do it every day.
Yeah.
Even though the restaurant I worked at was it was Tom Kitchen's restaurant up in Edinburgh, and because it's a fancy Michelin star one, actually they're not open all the time, so you get quite good days off. I think it's 4 days on, 3 days off.
Great.
Which is really good, but then I don't think you work any less hard in a normal restaurant where you don't get those kind of hours.
Yeah, no, of course. And actually, like I suppose people who do work in that industry, you know, 24/7, you just get used to it. But equally, I mean, it just doesn't bode well for life expectancy.
It is
high octane is just the most perfect description of it. And I mean, it is similar to being a comedian. It's not similar to day-to-day life as a comedian because you choose how often you work, you know, and how often you do that kind of thing. But it sounds like similar to the Edinburgh Festival, actually, where it's like
relentless. Oh, yes, just on.
Adrenaline. Yeah, you're on for a month. And you know, and it just takes a really obvious toll on your body and your mental health. Like it does, like everybody comes back and gets really ill. And like, it's taken a different form every single festival for me. Like it'll be like, oh, this year it's going to be gastric flu, or oh, this year and every single performer experiences it. It's a different sort of gradients depending on how sensible they were or weren't in terms of how they decompress. But I mean, that's also similar for chefs, isn't it? It's like a how much you need to drink afterwards to get to sleep, basically, isn't it? A lot of the time,
yeah.
To come down, like you were saying, like you're so buzzing, just to empty your head.
It's
enough
very
to rest.
Hard to.
It's really interesting. So I think that's such a. Oh, I think it's an absolutely fascinating. It does really feel like a fascinating parallel in terms of worlds of work that I'd never considered before, that you look at this testosterone, adrenaline-filled life and think, well, I don't want the life, but I want those skills and I want to work with that stuff and I want to work creatively in that respect, so with food, with eating.
Yes.
And especially, I suppose then taking that visual side of it and saying how much of our eating we do with our eyes and our other senses before we've, I mean, actually just the smell of this is blowing my mind and I am going to have to start eating it. But it's a lot. But yeah, and then going, well, how can you find a way into this that I do want to do and that will give me a life that you do want to have? I feel like women are doing that with comedy as well, in the sense that we're going, well, I'll start a podcast, or I will,
yes,
I'll create a space that I would like to gig in on a Saturday night because it's not full of stags and hens and people that want to fight, you know.
Yes,
it does feel like an interest, like you make your own new world, you know, you make a way into that world that would be a life that you want to lead. Is that more successful?
Yes, I think that's a really kind of good analysis. The interesting thing about that is that food styling, while, you know, chefing is predominantly men,
yeah,
food styling is predominantly women.
Right.
And obviously things are changing now, but the photographers, who are obviously getting paid a lot more,
yeah,
they tend to be men. And
right,
the stylist who's making all the food, you're on a much lower salary, even though they'd have nothing to photograph if you weren't making something on set.
Oh, it doesn't make any sense. There's still so much work for feminism to do.
I was told very early on that the photographer is king, as in don't fuck with the photographer. I mean, or queen, if they're the queen.
Yeah.
And I've worked with both male and female photographers and I really don't think there's very much difference.
Yeah. I've started eating my frittata and it's so delicious.
I'm so glad you like it.
It's all, and you write about it, don't you, in the bit just before the recipe, but it's just head over heels herbs.
Yeah.
We have a bit of herbs on top of the main thing, but in Persian cooking,
they don't fuck around.
No, it's 1,000-to-1 herb to egg ratio.
Yes.
But it's so
lovely. I love the way they use herbs, like we'd use spinach or kale. Just they're a green and they're a really tasty green. So why wouldn't you use tons of it?
Well, they're 100 times more. I mean, I love spinach and kale, but what I love about them is that they're peppery and earthy. It's not the nuts. Other than that, compared to dill, mint, parsley all together, it's bland, spinach and kale. I mean, also, I never thought I'd never ever think to put dill and mint in an egg-based thing, but it works. It's so lovely and light and airy.
I think you have to not go overboard on the dill for us, because I think you can have too much dill. Mm-hmm. But the other herbs really temper it. And it makes, you know, when you go to some supermarkets and they've got big bunches of herbs, that's what you want, rather than the little 25-gram packets or the 100-gram packets.
I've got the dill in a big bunch from the shop.
Oh, you've got one of those corner shops.
Yeah,
nice.
I've got one of those corner shops. I'm in Southeast
London. Jealous.
Delicious.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?"
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I'd love to hear about your testing process, especially as you're in the middle of it at the moment. And I think there's a lot of mystery around it. I don't think people understand. Well, on the one hand, I don't think lots of people know the graft that goes into putting together an entire book of recipes. And also, I think sometimes there are people who have other people do all of that for them.
Oh, yes. Yeah, of course.
I just want to know all about the graft and the process.
Okay, so I think the tin books are a really easy example to start with, because with those, I could think, right, I want a carrot-based roasting tin dish. What's nice with carrots? Cumin. Yeah, cumin's lovely. What else? Coriander. Yeah, coriander's nice. Okay, so now I've just got carrots, coriander, cumin. I'll need some salt and oil. Okay, that's the base of my dish. What am I going to serve it with? Maybe some baked feta. Okay, right, we slab of feta in the middle, and then let's finish it off with parsley, coriander, dill. Let's do dill. Right. And then, so when I submit a proposal for a book, I always do 75 recipes, because the thought of doing 100 just terrifies me.
Yeah.
So each book is 75, because I feel that's manageable.
Yeah.
And I will send into the publisher about 60 titles of recipes.
Right.
But as you can tell from the roasting tin books, Pepper, stop crying. Stop crying. Okay, go and find Dino. Where's Dino? Do you want to fetch Dino? Yeah? Do you want to show Jess Dino? Come. Yeah, can you show her the dinosaur? Can you put it up here? fetch it up. Was it the dinosaur? You got your dinosaur.
You got
Well done. Well done. Good girl.
She's gorgeous.
So in a way, I write my recipe titles in a way, spiced roasted carrots with feta and parsley, feta, lemon and parsley. That really helps me when it comes to the testing, because I can see at a glance everything that's meant to be in it.
Yep.
So for me, I find I can't really write that up until I've done it. So what I do is I have my laptop open or a piece of pen and paper, and then I grab everything I want from the fridge, put it out or cupboards.
Yep.
And then also I like the flexibility is why I prefer to test at my house or my mum's house, actually, because she's got a great larder. Because if, as you're pulling your coriander out, you think, oh, do you know what? Smoked paprika would be great. Pull it out.
Yeah.
And you just sort of bounce off things that you've got as well.
Yeah.
And sometimes it will be, oh, why did you use that in that dish? Because I've run out of something else. Or because you think, this would be really delicious.
Well, just so like you would with it when you're totally improvising, ultimately, isn't
exactly.
it? Or when you've got a recipe and you're like, well, I don't have any dill, so I'm going to have to chuck some whatever it is.
Exactly. Yeah. It feels like a sort of guided improvisation. And and the main thing is you want someone else to be able to do it, so you just write down everything. And put 2 teaspoons of this. Right, the oven is on this temperature, and this is how long it goes in for. And you write down 25 minutes. Shit, it's not cooked. Okay. Scratch that, 35 minutes, take it out. And then the final bit is whatever you do for the dressing and the tasting. And then for me, if it's worked at that stage, I'll give it a big tick and it can go in the book, but I know I'm going to get a second test for the shoot.
Yeah.
And that'll be really helpful because people on the shoot can eat it as well. Yes. But also the books have, luckily I've got to the stage where my publisher was like, can I have a professional recipe tester? Now they're like, yes, you can. But before, I relied on my family and friends.
Amazing.
So that list of 60 to 75 titles, I sent on an email chain to my friends and family.
We've met.
Well, the thing is, a lot of them are young mums. Kind of looking for, especially with the tin books, they want something like easy and interesting. And they're really bored of making the same thing. But in the oven while they look after little kids is really helpful. So I felt like I was imposing, like, no, please God, give us more dinner ideas.
Amazing.
So it's great. And that's such a good early way of both testing it for people to say, well, do you know what? In my oven, that only took 15 minutes and it burnt. Or in my oven, that took 45. Or have you thought about adding orange juice to this? Oh yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
But also,
or like the chopping took me a bit longer than it said, but
exactly.
I did put the bins out, do three rounds of washing up and clean all the surfaces.
Exactly. Yeah, it's really interesting, I think, on the prep time being, because I quite like it when people come back with a specific, oh no, it did take me 10 minutes to chop, yeah. Or you know what, this is a 20 minute job. Yeah. So it's super helpful. And as an indicator of which recipes are going to be really popular, just from that list.
Yeah.
Because people ask for the same ones. And I feel that it's so interesting the way that a title's written that will make you want to eat it. So if you just said cottage pie.
Of course, the quality of writing in the top line. Does it get called that as well in recipe writing?
Or I mean, just I just the call title? It the, I just call it the title, but yeah. I always think like if you don't have a picture and you can't be asked to like scan through the list of ingredients, I want the titles to tell you everything you might need to know.
It's about good writing from the off, isn't it? You're showcasing the everything from the top line. It's the same if you're ever pitching to write a sitcom or any narrative thing for screenwriting. It's always like you can have the entire contents of a 6-part drama ready, but they'll be like, great, love it. Give me a top line. Give me a great top
yes.
line. And you're like,
oh, tell me what it is in six words so I understand.
Okay. But it's a really important part of the process, and it's fascinating that it is with coming up with recipes too. Have you ever had, as part of the testing process, a nut that you couldn't crack?
Oh, yeah.
And you had to, change completely any particularly memorable eureka moments or breakthroughs with something?
I think in that sort of, sorry, that classic, I'm just going to pull this out of the oven, which I think I can do attached to all of this gear.
Amazing.
All right, it smells really, really nice. It smells really chocolatey. Exactly what you would want. I think I have a bit of a blank probably for both of them, because by the time you've written all the recipes, discarded the ones which were terrible, improved the ones that need improving, I sort of tend to forget about it then until the book's published and then people start making them.
That's
because I'm sick of the sight of them. like sort of soon after handing in, I'm sick of them. But then by the time you get to pub, I'm like, oh, I love this. This was really great. And then it will make its way onto the rotation again. Would you like to see the pudding?
Oh,
hello,
wow.
Pudding.
Look at that.
I've gone for old school. Oh, hello. It looks really fit.
Oh, it looks amazing.
Okay. I'm going to put some in a bowl and I can join you having something to eat.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, actually, funny enough, my editor asked me that, because I had a new editor because my last one got promoted and went to a different company, which is sad for me. But my new one's lovely, but we're having some trouble with a couple of the cakes in the new book. And I've tested them so many times, and each time something sinks in the middle, and then a test has done it and it's sunk for them as well. And she said, just out of interest, what do you do when this happens? Like, what does a recipe writer do when you just... And I said, I'll give it another couple of bashes, at which point it's not going to go in the book, and I'll just think of something else. It's a bit of a... You feel like it's a late stage to come up with a new recipe, but it's better that than having something that people are going to make and then complain. Like, there was a chocolate cake in... is it the River Cottage cake? Or kind of chocolate... a devil's food cake. Anyway, some kind of chocolate cake, and apparently it never works, and it's just a famous recipe that doesn't work. And there's only one in my books which doesn't. It's not that it doesn't work; it doesn't look like the picture.
Oh, that's funny.
Because it's a cannellini bean falafel, and when you make it, they make these sort of flat, round discs. They don't stand up like falafel; they're sort of like flat little patty falafel types.
Right.
And they're really, really tasty. But on the shoot, I didn't have any cannellini beans, which you meant to have, but I did have chickpeas.
Nice.
And there was just no time. And I was really, really stressed and really rushed. And maybe it was the last day of the shoot. And I just thought, well, fuck it. I'm just going to make them with the chickpeas. It'll be exactly the same. And of course, they looked different. They looked rounder and darker.
Darker,
and plumper. And they went into the book like that because I couldn't do anything about it. And I should have maybe just written a note that I'd made them with chickpeas. Actually, that's a really good amend to make. And that is the only recipe that I get people writing. It's like, well, look, I made them and they were really flat. And I'm like, no, they're flat. When I make them, it's just like,
oh,
the picture.
Oh, no.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
But actually, maybe, because we've just never been able to reshoot it either. maybe I could just ask them to add a line of text saying, these were made with chickpeas. Yours will be flatter. Ignore photo opposite. Scratch it out.
Yeah. Or make them with chickpeas.
Or make them with chickpeas. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's a real arse. If I could just take that one out, I'd be much happier.
Oh, how funny that there's like that, like sticking. Yeah. Comical.
Oh, this is really good.
Oh, is it? Is it really chocolatey? What sort of bread did you use? Oh, actually, it's spoilers, isn't it, for a future recipe?
Oh, God, no, of course not. I just used White Farmhouse.
Nice.
I think you want plastic bread. Yeah. No one wants a sourdough bread and butter pudding, do they?
No, I don't think they do. I think I love sourdough, and I've got some with my frittata, but it's not for every occasion. It's been maybe slightly overly, it's faddy. I say that. I want to give a shout out.
Good for
to
a grilled cheese.
Good for a grilled cheese. And just good for the... I've started getting it delivered because I'm a wanker. But there's a lovely bakery called Cooper's in Broccoli. They put a card through my door and, they come on a bike once a week and bring
Oh, that's amazing.
Sourdough. And it arrived today. And I think it's like a rite of passage that on the day it arrives, you've got to just have a slice untoasted with butter on top. And actually, I mean, this is perfect to go with
absolutely.
A
frittata.
Yeah.
We get through dangerous amounts of bread here. Mm. There's a lovely bakery, I don't know if you know, Bread and Butler in Deptford as well.
They're great, aren't they?
Yeah, really do good cardamom buns as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're well good.
Okay, I'm going to have to look that up. Mm. Would you talk to me about eating growing up? Mm-hmm. You're from East London?
Mm-mm.
No.
My family grew up in Cambridgeshire.
Okay, lovely.
So, little village near Peterborough. There's a church and a post office and a pub and some fields. But there's basically nothing there. So, as a kid, obviously, now I think, God, what a rural idyll. And when you're a kid, it's really annoying because you have to be driven everywhere and the bus only goes past your house like once every day.
Yeah.
Once. And if you miss it, you can't go anywhere.
Oh.
So you're very reliant on lifts. So learning to drive is, I think, for all countryside kids, it's a big deal because they're like, I'm free, I can drive anywhere. So that's where I grew up. And my mum is a fantastic cook and my dad is also a good cook, but maybe that classic division of labour thing, even though they're both working. Both my parents are GPs, my mum's retired now. She used to get a little bit territorial about the kitchen. So you'll just do it wrong. No, out. So luckily not with me and my sister, but my poor dad's like, fine, okay. But she's one of, you know, those love languages that people talk about. Yeah. I think she's one of those people who expresses her love through cooking and through food. So even if you had a bit of a row, she'd be like, I made you a sandwich. So have some tea. So rather than sort of say, yeah, sorry, we had a row, she'll just sort of make something for you to eat. And if you don't really understand that, I think it's quite frustrating. I'm too annoyed with you to eat. made for me. But I understand it more now. I think I'm
so
quite similar.
Funny.
It's really interesting.
Oh, I'm quite similar. 100%. There's, I'd say that 90% of my olive branches come in the form of a hot drink that's been made or
a peace offering.
It is, isn't it? And my dad is like a cartoon level of that, like he is. And his mum was the same. She's Austrian and she was very, what's comical is, or / awful, is that the sort of borderline feeder or really main way of expressing love through food. But it came with a simultaneous, really strong hatred and judgment of all fat people. So it's quite confusing.
Oh, God, no,
but
I know.
It was quite like, you know, he eats. Don't you like, oh, that's so confusing.
But no, my dad, absolutely.
My favourite moment of it with my dad is my son was about 4 years old. We went on a disastrous holiday. It was just the rubbishest holiday I've ever had. Where I had a newborn. My then partner and my dad didn't get on. My dad was actually, I think at the time, pretty heartbroken from a breakup, but couldn't compute that and was just being horrible to everyone. And then we just had this awful fallout. And afterwards, we didn't speak for 3 months. It's the longest I've ever not spoken to my dad for. It was really. I mean, he's a character, but the closest thing I'd ever get to an apology and the only reason I knew it was over was when we went for he lives still in Dorset where I grew up, and we'd gone for a coffee and it was all sort of you know, it's fine, small talk. And I was about to drive back up to London, and he went, "Oh, I've got this for you." And it was just a carrier bag full of ready meals. But I knew that was his really classy apology. A plastic bag full of microwavable dinners.
That's really funny.
I'm sorry, I love you. And I was like, all right. Oh, yeah, we can be friends.
That's really funny. That sounds quite similar to home.
Yeah.
Except I think my dad's more with the less with the cook, more like acts of service. So I don't know if cooking counts as acts of service, but if you know, you go home, like, I'm just going to check the oil in your car. I'm just going to make sure that your tyre pressure is, you must check your tyre pressure. Okay, Dad, shall I do it for you? Yes.
Thank you. Yeah.
Just like all the really proud. I mean, I think my mum said when she started driving here, maybe she learned to drive. Yeah, she learned to drive here. They shared a car, maybe by the time she got her own little car. She said for months she realised that she had never filled up the petrol and she didn't actually know how to fill up the petrol.
Wow.
And when she broached this with my dad, he said, well, I'll do it for you. She said, I need to learn how to do it. And he was actually a bit offended on the basis that, well, I can,
Don't take away my usefulness.
I'm trying to help you. Why would you? And you know, her big thing with us as kids was let them do their chores. You know, my job was clearing the dishwasher or, you know, clean the shoes. I actually love cleaning shoes. It smells great. But, you know, he'd try and take jobs off. Oh, they're just children. Let them go and watch television or whatever they do. Yeah. And she said, they're never going to learn to be useful people if you just keep taking their tasks away. I'm trying to teach them some discipline here. And he's like, oh, they're just, you know.
Oh, lovely philosophies. And I do think it's so funny when you watch those things, you know, you clock them in your parents and you go, well, I understand them now and I have empathy for that now, etc. And then you're like, oh, and now I do that.
Absolutely.
Like I've had my mum's, she never used to be when I was little, but these days is very territorial over her kitchen. And, you know, in recent years, and I love cooking, you know, and I'd be like, I would love to cook one night for everyone. And you know, she just can't bear it. And then if she does ever let me cook, she gives me a recipe and tells me exactly what to use and how to do it. And I'd be like, all right, you know, because she's got a plan. And I get it, you know, she knows what's in her fridge, she knows when what's going off, and she had a plan. So, you know, let me. And she's pretty chilled in life, but I think not these days when it comes to sort of kitchen management.
That's really funny.
I was like, oh god, that's so controlling. You know, let me be creative. I'm only trying to help. And now that my girlfriend moved in, I was like, oh, I am entirely my mum. She's like, can I cook on Tuesday? And I'm like, yeah, can you do something with those sweet potatoes? There's also this. She'll be like, oh god, you just really wanted to, I really wanted to make something up myself. I was like, oh, I'm entirely becoming my mum.
That's really funny. Managing a house is really dull.
Yeah, it is. And actually, like, oh, I don't know, you can live under the illusion that you need to be quite tightly wound screw to keep everything in order and avoid waste and blah blah blah, and actually it's all just about managing expectations of achievement. I think there's only so much we can all do.
Absolutely.
Yum in my tum.
I'm going to ask you some more sort of quick fiery eating-y questions.
Okay,
what's the swankiest thing you've ever eaten?
Ooh, swankiest thing. Maybe. You know how when you go to Paris, or when one went to Paris back when Paris was open?
Yeah.
You could go to somewhere that was quite unassuming and not necessarily super, super fancy.
Yeah.
But you'd get this really good meal.
Yes.
I think it was probably in some wine bar in Paris and getting foie gras with a little pile of sea salt crystals.
Whoa.
And some kind of really, really, really good chutney.
Amazing.
And brioche. And I recently decided I'm going to turn pescatarian, but I'm still having slight pangs. Not over foie gras, because I'm not that kind of person. Just thinking about chorizo and pancetta and things.
Yeah.
But and I really disagree with the way that foie gras, I think it's horrible the way that it's made.
But it's one of those things where it's like do you remember when everybody talks about Gap? You know, Gap are, it's so bad that Gap treat you know, they have their methods for getting their clothes are so terrible. And then the spotlight was on Gap, and actually, I'm sure Gap do a better job than lots of food clothes places now because everybody knows it. But it feels like foie gras is like the poster boy for terrible ethical food production.
I probably shouldn't have mentioned it.
But but the thing is, we've all if you've ever been on holiday to France, you'll have tried it.
And yeah, now it's the kind of thing you only try on holiday. Yeah,
exactly. And now I think I'm never having that again. And I'm so glad I did try it because it was delicious.
I think it's particularly with the sweetness of a chutney and the brioche. Yeah. And it's just like so buttery. I did read in Heston at Home that apparently ethically produced good, really good, which probably means really expensive foie gras.
Yeah.
It's just a farmer's wife with an apron full of corn, and the geese run up to her to get the corn. So they're obviously quite happy to be overfed.
Yeah,
obviously one doesn't.
Oh, totally. There's an amazing book. I can't remember the name of the author. I wonder if it's there. It's called The Third Plate, and it's got a fascinating whole chapter in it about this chap. It's the same. It's in Iberico where they breed the pigs.
Oh, the pigs! Acorn-fed pigs.
Yeah, and they're the same farm or a farm in that region. The farmer tried a thing where he just had the geese living freely outside, but with unlimited food essentially, and they overfed themselves. And he made foie gras, but then it's all about his chef's mission to get people to realise it tastes just as good as, but it doesn't have the yellow colour of corn-fed, force-fed geese. So it's about the colour that chefs are looking for. So it's and actually, it's so interesting how I think that book taught me anything. It's that chefs can really change public perception over time just by using a certain thing a lot. You know, you popularise a thing, etc. And equally do great things. Chefs have done so many brilliant things in terms of opening people's eyes to the nutritional weakness of certain processed foods or waste, supermarkets rejecting things or blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I digress.
I think if you're on that, I think it's really interesting in good ways, sort of like chefs like Otlangi getting everyone used to just using za'atar and ras el hanout and that being a totally normal supermarket ingredient. But on the normalizing things that aren't, I have this, I think I was overly affected by that food hygiene video that you have to watch at cookery school where they show you a kitchen covered in salmonella because they've got UV or something. And it's chicken liver pate, which is, as I learned on the course, the number one cause of food poisoning at weddings in the UK, or was when people were allowed to have weddings with people in pate, because chefs like to cook it pink. So because otherwise it just looks like a slab of grey and it's really ugly. But that is essentially pink chicken. And if you wouldn't cook a chicken breast pink on the inside, you shouldn't cook a chicken liver pink on the inside. It's really grim. Chefs. Bloody chefs.
Bloody coming over here. Chefs and photographers. You want to take a pay cut, mate?
Take a pay cut and cook your chicken liver.
Well, I think the swankiest thing you've ever eaten is probably one of the swankiest things in the universe, so it's an excellent answer. Have you ever accidentally eaten anything that's not food?
a good amount of collie hair seems to get into everything nowadays, which is deeply unpleasant. This is really gross, but I found a collie hair in my eyeball the other day. I was like, why is my eye itching? And then you sort of put, lovely, there is a collie hair in my eye. Lovely. As a cat owner, I imagine this may happen
to you
as well.
It's exactly the same, especially
it's
as
just grim.
We've just come out of a really cold spell at the time of recording. And the cats, you can't stroke them without having an entire wig in your hand.
I know, you could stuff cushions with what comes off them. Thank God she's not molting at the moment, but when she was, I just thought, it's like wading through fur in here. I don't think I have. You accidentally swallow a fly sometimes when you're outside.
Yeah.
That's not very nice.
Oh, I've not done that for a long time.
You know, you're breathing. Sorry for breathing. And your mouth's maybe a bit open, and then a little fly gets in.
And then you think, I wonder if it's never made me ill, but fascinating.
Unpleasant.
I wonder if it'll be like a post-apocalyptic day where we're like, oh, good, thank you for the protein. are there any foods or drinks which you hate that most people love, or that you love that most people hate?
I really don't like avocados.
Fair enough.
I think they're like shit butter.
a lovely description. Just like shit butter, really. I love avocados. If they are perfectly ripe. I'm quite an eater upper, and I hate throwing food away. Mm. One of the things I hate about avocados is how easy it is to crack one open and be like, right, well, that's...
When it's all black inside.
Yeah, no, or the other way. And you're like, well, that felt like it was ready. And actually, it's just, that's like rubber in there still. It's like rock hard. Or stringy. Sometimes they've got like bits of brown string.
Yes.
But in fairness, I do love avocados unless they're involved in a pudding. And it's a very faddy vegan thing to involve them in a pudding, and that can swivel because you can always tell that an avocado's been involved in the making of the thing unless it's frozen, in which case you're not really tasting anything anyway.
No.
Have you ever had a patch where you ate the same thing every day?
I think, when I was a kid.
Really?
Yeah, I think I just really like rice and chicken nuggets.
it's not a traditional combo, so I quite like that.
It's quite like, small.
Like,
and I think
rice and nuggets.
And my sister was rice, cucumber and chicken nuggets.
Oh, well, at least she was getting
a raw really veg balanced in there. Plate there.
Yeah, she was.
If there's any nutritional value in cucumber whatsoever.
It's just water, isn't it? Crunchy
water.
Yeah,
basically, green crunchy water. You know, those like frozen chicken nuggets.
Yeah, fantastic.
We used to have them as kids.
Yeah.
We grew up fine. Yeah. I feel like children maybe eat less convenience food now. I don't know.
Well, posh, liberal, middle-class parented children don't eat as many. But I mean, I say that. In normal life, when my kids at school and stuff, at the moment we've got time to do more cooking. But in normal life, it started off as pizza Thursdays. Mm-hmm. And now it's just beige Thursdays. So sometimes it'll be pizzas, sometimes it'll be nuggets, sometimes it'll be whatever. And when we
pasta with cheese?
Yeah. Oh no, that counts as a proper meal because I'll normally make a sauce with it. Yeah.
Oh, I like it just with butter and grated cheddar.
Oh, really? I see. I've never had that. I'm too middle class. My girlfriend's Scottish and she would love that. Like, she has toast with just butter and I'm like, who hurt you? Like, I want another, like, there's 18 different things you can spread on that and you're just having butter. But, I think
great.
It's a really sensible, it's a less stressful way to live, being like that, being like, well, I'm just going to have the things that I know taste nice. I'm like, I want another 18 flavours in there. I'm making life too hectic for myself. 5 second rule, yes or no?
Depends where I am and what the food is.
Sure. I think it's different once you've got a pet, isn't it?
As
well. It's a bit of a game changer. Is there anything that you eat in a particularly ritualistic way? I think the sort of standard thing is the old Cadbury's cream egg that people have a specific way of eating. But have you got, is there any other, it's often confectionery. Hmm. Someone once answered with an incredible answer about how they have their Big Mac.
If you want, I can give you a two McDonald's related, non-McDonald's related answer.
Yes, please.
Non-McDonald's related is a hot chocolate. So I like to do it properly where you like chop up real chocolate, heat the milk, drop the chopped chocolate in. It's 250 grams of whole milk, 40 grams of dark 70% chocolate, 2 teaspoons of sugar, and you whisk it. And it should completely melt. And then you use a milk frother. It's Ruby Tando's recipe. It's really, really nice.
Wow. And
it works really well with a slug of Bailey's or a slug of Di Serrano. It's really nice. So I think I make quite a ritual about making it. And I make it in a particular, really beautiful pale pastel milk jug that's quite a tall one. So it feels, and then you pour it from a height and it all feels very special. And I sit down and I am having a hot chocolate. And it's not something that you have when you do other things.
So nice.
It's really good.
You give me a real pang for when we're allowed people in our gardens again. Mm. Even when if we do a sort of staggered exit of lockdown, that's exactly the sort of thing that you can say, do you know what? I know it's cold, but you're allowed in my garden. We can light a fire and I'm going to make this proper
you can toast
chocolate.
Marshmallows to put on it.
Yes.
Or in it. I mean, they look terrible. You can't photograph it when you put toasted marshmallows in it, but they are tasty AF.
Oh, get in. My son doesn't think it's a hot chocolate if it hasn't got some marshmallows somewhere.
It does really make a difference, doesn't it? That like sugary hit.
Yeah, exciting.
The McDonald's related one. Oh, sorry, sorry.
No. Yeah, tell me.
Oh, sorry. The McDonald's related one is chicken nuggets.
Yes.
Which I eat in the car while I'm driving. Mm-hmm. So I've got the bag on my lap, and then I open the box before I set off. Yeah. And I inhale because it smells like when I was a kid, but only the first inhale when you open the box and you smell the nuggets and the hot cardboard and it smells like when you're a kid and this is the best thing ever. But then you start eating them and I've tried sniffing the box. It's not the same.
That's so funny.
It's really
nice. God, it's so lovely. Yeah, I used to go to a gym that was next to an Asda, and it was before I stopped eating meat. Apart from very rarely when I still do. Mm. But they would do not McDonald's, but like hot nuggets or hot strips of chicken. And that'd be the same thing. You'd open it, go, and then drive and eat them on the move. And it's a really exciting when you get to a lights or something, so you can be like, yeah, get another one.
I know. It's really weird. Oh, yeah, I feel like that's why I do keep Dettol wipes in my car, on the basis that I need to like wipe the steering
wheel. Yeah, well, you know, you've got like really greasy, greasy really fingerprints greasy. On the steering wheel.
Yeah.
Oh, I think we're living our best lives. Say scrumdiddlyumptious.
No!
And then you can be in my podcast.
Scrumdiddlyumptious.
Showers and baths get confused. There's a spell. The showers and baths start doing each other's jobs. It's a disaster, Rukmini. Every time anyone stands in a shower, their feet get wet and the floor floods. When they lie down in a bath for a bath, it's like sitting under a crap tepid fountain, only wets a small circle of their back because a shower's trying to go up instead of a bath. And if they move, then it ruins their ceiling. If this was the only problem, we'd cope, except you can only begin to imagine the devastation that's wrought every time the sky tries to rain. It just does a whole bathload of water down. It's carnage. They've agreed to pack this nonsense in and undo this behaviour and go back to their normal behaviours, but only if you, and Will, it does have to be you, agree to sing O Flower of Scotland 800 times without a break whilst walking in sidesteps round and round and round your own block until that's done. It sounds impossible, but you do it! You're a hero. Your reward is a place in history as the woman who saved us all from a lifetime of shower bath confusion and floods and underwater living. Your reward so you've gone down in history. You are happy as it's possible to be. Like, it feels incredible. Everyone's like, you're amazing, you saved. Your reward in the moment, though, is the feast of your dreams. It's a fantasy feast, so nothing has to be possible. I certainly couldn't give a shit about consequences, health, none of that. Could give a shit, ethics. And nothing even has to be possible. It's the opposite of a last meal in the sense that you're the happiest because of how long it took to do all that singing. You're starving. You're the hungriest and happiest that it's possible to be. And I would love to know in that situation what the feast of your dreams would be. The other caveat to mention is that I'm aware this is only your answer now, and that had I asked you even in 10 minutes' time, you could give a different answer, or had I given a different run-up scenario, it could be a different answer. But theoretically, what would your fantasy feast be?
I think it would have to start with a round of things that are deep fried.
Nice.
So maybe some little arancini, but only really good ones and really small ones. And they can't be disappointing. They've got to be perfectly crisp on the outside and really good risotto on the inside. And then maybe something nice, like a bit of cheese inside. And if they do have truffle, it's got to be pretty strong because, So arancini. And then maybe some, if we're just going to go general things that are fried. Zucchini fries. See, there seems to be an Italian theme going on here.
Yeah, nice.
Zucchini fries, really fresh, just out of the, you know, the skinny ones, like really skinny, not fat ones, like chips are just wrong. They're not crispy enough and they're wet on the inside. I sound like I'm being very negative, but I'm just very specific.
No, I know, I like fried. It. I like it that you know exactly how you want these things.
And then maybe you would need something a little bit fresh, like, so maybe a few shots of gazpacho as a palate cleanser. Zucchini, Mediterranean theme. And then a massive bowl of freshly made cacio e pepe, like they make in padella.
What?
Which is wormy pasta. Oh. It's great. It's a Roman thing. So it's like these thick pasta worms that are freshly made, and they're just, there's no egg in them. They're just a flour and water pasta, but they look like little skinny, long, wormy gyros. Oh. And the sauce is just pecorino, shit ton of black pepper, butter, and salt. And it coats it as a lovely sauce, even though it's just like, basically melted cheese, but you shouldn't melt it because it'll get, you know, blobby. But it's so nice, and you have more pepper in it than you can imagine.
Yeah, I'm into that.
To the point which a little bit more would be too much. That's just right. And then I suppose you want something light again. But I really like tiramisu, so I think that might... Oh, I love profiteroles too. And Nigella's chocolate raspberry cake.
Have those.
Have you had that before? It's really good.
No.
And then maybe just a tiny spoon of like raspberry sorbet or something.
Oh, amazing. Mm. Amazing. How lovely. God, that... I feel like I need to sort of take a bit of time on my own to have a think about that food. Like you just sort of rattled it off, but I was like, whoa, yeah, whoa, oh, hang on, oh god, yeah, oh,
well,
oh,
I'm quite hungry. I think
okay,
doing this before lunch is really clever.
Okay,
but I think actually you could do that last bit as a cafe gourmand and then have a really good coffee, so you just have like a little bit of
cafe gourmand
one.
Like cake tapas,
I think. Yes, yeah, it's like French cake tapas. You get three little bites of delicious like petit four style cakes with a coffee.
Please. Oh yeah. God, incredible. Oof, well, I am going to take some time on my own with those thoughts. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you so much. This is really fun.
What a gorgeous guest. Make sure you're following Rukmini on Instagram at Miss Minifer, M-I-N-I-F-E-R, Miss with two S's. And as we said, she's got four books out, all tray-baked books. I implore you to get them in your recipe book canon. And excitingly, there is a new one. Not that I knew that before we spoke, but coming out in April. So any day now, actually, which we can all pre-order. It's a vegetarian barbecue book called The Green Barbecue. I have pre-ordered mine. Links to everything I just waffled on there, as ever, are in the podcast notes. If you want to try Oddbox, you can get a tenner off your first box using a link that's also in those podcast notes or in the biog of the podcast Twitter account at The Hoover Room Pod, which makes it only, I think, $2.99 for your first ever fruit and veg box from Oddbox. I think they're the absolute nuts. Make sure you're following everything Rukmini does. If you're following my business, which I would love you to, follow me at Jessica Foster Q. I'm hoping soon to have the tour dates that were meant to be rescheduled to right now moved, some of them at least, into July. Oh, wouldn't that be nice? Hopefully we can do gigs again then. As soon as I know, you'll know. And I'm sorry it's frustrating to wait to find out. It's even more frustrating for me. I wish I knew what was going on. You can see me doing some stand-up on the television. It was on last Tuesday at 10 p.m. I was on a new stand-up show called Funny Festival Live, or Festival of Funny Live. Just look on iPlayer. Yeah, and so that'll be on the iPlayer now. Feel free to support the podcast with lovely reviews. I'd love that. Tell other people about it. If you've got spare money, you can support the podcast financially at Acast Supporter or on Patreon. Anything longer than a tweet to send me, you can do that by emailing me through my website, jessicafosterq.com. Huge thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Hoovering is produced by Emma Corsham and the music is by Mike Greenway. Until next week, happy hoovering.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.